Hi, this is Dave from Searchwise 015. We've just completed our 500th cache. Bring a bit of bread along. GC1J630 by BJ and H in Townsville. And you're listening to Geotalk, the podcast for Australian geocaching.
This episode of GeoTalk, FireSafe tells us about his amazing geocaching record. We speak to the creator of The Hidden Park, and we bring you up to date with geocaching news from around the country. All this and a little bit more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 48 of GeoTalk. Now, I'm not going to talk too much because we've got two really great interviews in this particular episode, and they go for about 15 minutes each, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. A couple of things to update you on. Now, first of all, if you haven't been on the GCA forums over the last week or two, you wouldn't have noticed a topic called Twinkle Twinkle Little Cache. Now, Papa Bear left brought this to everyone's attention that there was a YouTube video of the caches in New Zealand appearing as tiny little sort of stars or dots that flash up every time one is placed. And it's done over a timeline, and you get to see over the last couple of years all the caches that have populated around New Zealand. And it's a fantastic video. I'll give you a link in the show notes for this episode. And you can almost see all the cities around New Zealand. Well, not to be outdone, Caught at Work has cut some code and done the same for Australia. So now there are YouTube videos to show you all the caches that have been placed since Lane Cove back in May 2000, right up until some events in mid-August. So you can see how caching has evolved in Australia. And he's also done it on a state-by-state and territory basis as well. So check those out. I'll give you the links on the website at geocachepodcast.com. Very quickly, update on geocaching.com. They did a bit of an update last week. A few things that might affect you and that you will notice. First of all, any caches that you put on your ignore list will now not come up on the search for nearest caches from you, and they also won't show up on the geocaching.com or the Google Maps, I should say. So that's really great. Another thing that I've noticed, now I don't know if this is a bug or what they've done in this for this particular instance, but the date order on your logs, check them out, check some of your caches, but I've found that the logs are now appearing as they are entered into geocaching.com. So if someone does your cache and then forgets to log it for 6 months and then goes back and puts it in, it seems to then be appearing at the top. It's not sort of slotting back in where it should be in date order. So I'm not too sure what the thinking behind that one was. But the real catcher, and this is one to be quite careful of, if you're typing in your log and you forget to choose, this is when you're logging a visit or a DNF, if you forget to choose from that pull-down menu at the top, you type your log and then think, oh, that was meant to be a found or a did not find, and then you choose it from your pull-down menu, the page refreshes and you will lose all your text. Now, I don't know why this has happened or what the thinking is behind it, but be very careful. Best to, if you realize you've done that, to copy your text anyway, particularly if it's a long log, or use the pull-down menu first. So there are a few changes on the geocaching.com website. And very briefly in GPS news, for those of you who haven't seen it on some of the GPS blogs, Garmin look like they're going to be bringing out another handheld touchscreen GPS. It's going to be called the Dakota. Now, it looks a little bit smaller. It looks like the Oregon, but it looks a little bit smaller than the Oregon, and some blogs are tipping it to replace some of the eTrex line, or it could be used to replace the Edge series, which is used mainly by cyclists. Now, some are suggesting that because Team Garmin will be heading to the Tour de France, which is starting any day now, that there might be an announcement. So look, check it out. Keep your eye on the blogs, on the news websites for the possible launch of the Garmin Dakota. Well, now it's time to get into the first interview for this particular episode. But before we do, the trivia question for this GeoTalk episode, and the question's a fairly simple one. Who was the fastest geocacher to reach 1,000 finds in Australia? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Oh. Well, on this episode of Geo Talk, we head up into the Adelaide Hills and we're going to chat with FireSafe, also known as Scott. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Aaron. I'm good to be here.
Now, the main reason we got you on the program is to chat about a new record that you've set. Now, a few episodes back, some people might recall, I spoke to Flipper & Co., who were from Adelaide, and they had set a record for the most number of consecutive days caching, which was 222. You've set a new benchmark, Scott. Tell us, how many days?
Well, made it through to 333 days.
That's it's an incredible number, almost a year.
Almost a year. Some people said, why haven't you gone the year? And I said, well, what is a year? Is it 365 or is it 366? So I thought, well, Flipper & Co. did 222, I'd do 333.
What prompted you to go after the record?
I actually heard it on Geo Talk when you spoke with Flipper & Co. and I thought, oh, how hard can that be? And I can still say now it is hard. It is real hard. You get the 100 days. Yeah, that's not too bad. What's that, about 3 months? That's fairly achievable. And then I saw, okay, let's go for 200 days, and we got there. And it was getting hard, but did quite a bit of travelling sort of around that time, you know, school holidays and things like that. So I managed to get it interstate and some areas that I hadn't cached. So managed to make up a few more, got to 222 quite easily. And I thought, well, I've got there. Where am I going to stop?
Were there any moments where you nearly didn't make it for a particular day, or you thought, gee, I just don't know if I can do this?
Well, it was going to be an individual record, and there was a period in the end of November, and I was out chasing one of Zitherin's puzzle caches, and true to name, I ended up in hospital for 8 days. So it became a family record. I had Jenny and the kids out there for those 8 days that I was in hospital, and I was working out all the puzzle caches in my hospital bed and getting them to go out after school to get those 8 days for me.
Now, should I ask, you said it was during a Zither in case, should I ask exactly what happened?
It was it was a Tuesday afternoon, beautiful day, probably about 25 degrees, sun shining, all that sort of thing, sort of end of November, start of getting towards the start of summertime. And had a newbie geocacher, and was taking him out to some caches out to the north of Adelaide, and there was one out near Tea Tree Gully that we were going, which he had actually worked out himself, which was good because I'm not much into working out the puzzle caches. So we went to go find this cache, and it was up near a quarry, and there was quite a bit of scrub and stuff to get to where GZ was. And we pushed our way through this scrub, and it was that, we call it bugger bush, but the stuff with little spines on it that get you. And must have obviously scratched myself or something going through that, because wearing shorts was a fairly warm day, or a warmish day, and didn't think anything of it. And we tried about three or four places getting up there. We'd never found the cache. Lunchtime the next day, all of a sudden, was feeling extremely unwell. So I went home from work, and the next day I found myself in hospital with a leg infection. Wow. So whatever was in the scrub there at the time, it's got me and knocked me out for 8 days.
That's amazing. I mean, normally when you were painting the picture, I had this image of a snake or something like that, or maybe, you know, a tick infestation, but just from a plant.
Yeah, that's what they put it down to. See, it was golden. It ended up being golden staff, and the word is that it's out there everywhere now. So you've got to be pretty careful. So you must have, well, now when I'm caching it in the scrub, I wear long pants. So that's the lesson for the day out of that one, that's for sure. So it was nearly a 333 individual thing, but ended up being a family thing.
Well, I think it's a fairly amazing record either way, and that's an amazing injury. I don't think too many people would have, not in Australia anyway. Tell us a little bit about how you got into geocaching.
Well, I'm a bit of a gadget guy, I guess, or a geek, or whatever you want to call it, but probably back in 2001 or 2002, not quite sure of the time, I had an old GPS, and I must have been Googling something. I'm not even sure if Google was around back then, but did some searching on the internet and came across geocaching. I signed up and didn't really do much with it. And then something back in 2007 sparked me to start it all up again. So really didn't get into it sort of till April, May 2007. And then got serious after that. Like 2007, did about 200 fines. And then 2008 last year, did about 800. And then this year so far, about 560. And obviously the going for the 333 days helped a big deal in getting the numbers up, that's for sure.
And how did you come up with your screen name?
I'm a firefighter, so Fire Safe has just sort of been something I've used for online stuff for years and years and years. So, you know, I just extended it once I signed up for geocaching.com as well. So that's sort of where that's come from.
Now, you mentioned that you've got some of the family into it. How do you go about, you know, going out with the kids and what do they enjoy it?
Yeah, they enjoy it. I think the big thing for us, we do a lot of travelling. We go to the snow every year, so, you know, some long journeys there. Got relatives in Sydney, Canberra, and that. So, and we also did a big trip up through to Darwin back in 2007. So, particularly those long trips, it's good to break it up, particularly for the kids, get them out of the car and running around for a bit. And geocaching is ideal for that. So, that's sort of where they can get involved in the whole thing. You know, Jenny, she can take it or leave it. And the eldest son, 14, he's sort of getting over it a bit. And but my daughter, who's 12, she's still fairly keen, so she'll come out with me and still do a bit of caching. Mm. So maybe they'll grow back into it. I don't know.
What aspect of geocaching do you enjoy the most?
I think it's probably getting out there and doing something. You know, you get busier and busier these days, and particularly with this record thing. It was really a chance to get away from behind the desk, because even though I'm a firefighter, I'm desk-based now, have been for 3 years, so I don't get as much probably physical activity as I should. So geocaching is a good opportunity to get out there and look at things, go for a walk, for one thing. Mm. And particularly on the long journeys, it's great to see places we just would never have gone to. And you know, a lot of the trips that we've been to and the places we've seen, there's no way we would have, you know, visited some of these places, and geocaching's taken us to places where there's some very interesting things to see and do.
Are there any places that are still on your wish list where you'd like to go and go geocaching?
We haven't done any geocaching, even though we've been to Western Australia and Tasmania. We haven't actually done any geocaching in those states. We've done geocaching every other state in Australia and territory. But we've still got Western Australia and Tasmania to do. Probably, you know, we've done a lot. I've done a lot of travelling overseas, but that was pre-geocaching time. So it'd be good to revisit some of those countries I've been to now with geocaching in mind, and do more areas that maybe I haven't been to over there as well.
Take you back over the, your last couple of years of geocaching. Any that stand out? Any highlights?
There's been a few. The Flinders Ranges was a couple of years ago now. With the Scouts, we did a full drive camp, come hike, come expedition, I guess you could call it, for a week of the school holidays. And some of the places we went to with that were good, not necessarily driving, but actually walking as well. It was it Mount Mary at St. Mary's Peak? That was a great walk up there, and there was a cache up there. And a lot of those areas, some of the ones we never got to, unfortunately, but we did get to a few and up around Arkaroola. And some memorable ones, sort of going across the snow through Victoria, there's some places that, you know, we've driven past for years and never stopped. There's an interesting one at Murrayville. A lot of people haven't been to that one, but there's this block of land on the corner in the town of Murrayville, and it's full of army tanks. There's probably 100 army tanks there. They're all broken up and from World War II, and there's a cache right in the middle of these army tanks. And that's interesting in itself, just seeing all these old tanks. But then you go on to the next town from there. I think it's called Cowbungie, I think it was the town. And there was a historic house there that the locals have restored, and it's open for inspection on various days and things like that. And we've got there, and as we've arrived, there's an old couple there tending the garden and things, and I thought, oh, here we go, we're not going to get this cache. And so we walked around looking at the house as if were interested in the old houses and the things. And the woman, she's noticed the GPS in my hand, and she said, "Ah, you're looking for the geocache." So this is interesting. We're out in the middle of nowhere, and she knows all about it. And what had happened was the local cop was obviously involved in geocaching and saw that there was a cache here, and told all the volunteers that work at this place to, you may find people sneaking around. Don't be alarmed. They're only looking for a geocache. So all the volunteers know about it. So we found that. So they wouldn't tell us where the cache was, but they watched us, and eventually when we found it, you know, they said congratulations and all that. And they told us a bit of the history of it, and because there was an old quarry there as well. And the guy that owned the old quarry had bought all these old army tanks and was using them for crushing the rock. And this old guy was about 92 not out. The locals want to get rid of all these tanks because it, you know, breeds vermin and all sorts of stuff, but he won't get rid of them. So they're basically waiting for him to die before they can get rid of the tanks. But it was sort of interesting why the tanks actually were there in the middle of nowhere.
Well, there you go. Everyone out around the place has got to get to this town to check out the tanks before he passes on. I mean, that's a fascinating story, and I think this is one of the things about geocaching, particularly for some of the smaller communities, because, I mean, I think Australia is no different to a lot of countries. We're seeing a lot of people leave the country and move to the city. I mean, in a way, this is a great way for some of those smaller places to sort of bolster their tourism numbers, I suppose.
Oh, for sure. Bring people back into town. Again, those two little towns there, they probably have maybe 25 or 30 people. They're not big towns.
Mm.
And, you know, they get a lot of through traffic because it's the main road through to like Ballarat or somewhere like that. But no one ever stops. So, and there's another place not far from there again, and along the same sorts of lines. I can't remember the name of the cache. I think it's on the rails to nowhere or something like that. And there's a full-blown train sitting out in the paddock. This guy bought this train from Vic Rail, and I think it's an electric train. It might be a diesel train. Not all that old, probably about 20 years old. And I'm not sure why it's there, but seemingly the story is he bought this and he moved it up to his parents' property, which was just out of, I think it's out of Echuca or somewhere up that way. And I think he had visions of B&B or something, I'm not quite sure. Sure enough, there's some rails and a train sitting out in this middle of the paddock. But even more bizarre, in the paddock across the road is another army tank. And the turret is actually pointing to where the cache is hidden. Whether it's a coincidence or not, I don't know. But, yeah, I thought that was pretty amazing as well.
Well, there you go. There's amazing spots out there.
There is.
All right, well, you've achieved your record of 333, and I think one of the things that most people say about geocaching is you get to set sort of little milestones or targets to reach for. What's your next one?
Good question. I'm having a break at them after 333 days. Although, having said that, you know, I did actually quite enjoy getting out each day. There were days when you know, the weather was down and you go, oh, gee, I've got to go out, but all in all, I enjoyed going out each day, and I'll probably miss it a bit. I went out on the weekend. I did a few, but I've just been busy this week with work, so I haven't actually made time to get out there. But I'm not sure what the next little milestone. I guess getting to 2,000 caches would be the next little milestone. You know, we're up to, I think, 1,570 or somewhere around there.
And final question, are we going to see you out at Wagga in Easter next year?
We're planning to be there. I've told everybody in the family that's where we're headed for Easter. So, well, if not the family, I'll be there anyway, and maybe team up with someone else.
All right. Well, look, it's been great chatting to you, and congratulations once again on the record, and thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thanks, Darren.
Heading to New York to speak with James Kane, who is originally a resident of Melbourne and is the creator of the Hidden Park application for the iPhone. Thanks for joining us on GeoTalk, James.
Thank you, Darren.
Now, the reason we decided to have a chat to you is in the last few weeks on the Geocaching Australia forums, there's been a lot of chatter about this new application for the iPhone called the Hidden Park. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. It's A blend of geocaching and alternative reality gaming. I don't know how familiar your listeners are to alternative reality gaming, but it's basically a way of immersing people into a game, so it feels a little bit like reality, although of course it's an alternate reality. And people will arrive at the park. It's really built for parents and children, but we've had responses from people who've enjoyed it of all ages so far. But people arrive at the park and they receive a phone call when they arrive at a particular location, and the main character tells them that the park is under threat by property developers and they need to find evidence of magical creatures living in the park if they're going to save it from destruction. And the game unfolds from there. They have to go around and hit different waypoints, and at these waypoints they are asked to solve different riddles, take photos of things, and we overlay the images, not to give away the game, but we overlay the images of the magical creatures onto the photos. Some of them are animated, some of them are stills, and at some points you actually have to play little games like Noughts and Crosses or Three Card Monty in order to progress.
So what sort of age group is the application aimed at?
Well, again, when we first did it, we thought the sweet spot would be about 4 to 9. I was here in Central Park in New York with my three-year-old nephew the other day, and he was having a ball. There's a point where one of the creatures looks like they're coming out of the ground, and we had to do that all the way home on the subway again and again and again ad nauseum. But he didn't quite understand some of the spatial elements of the game. Like he sort of understood the map, and you can track yourself in real time as you're walking through the map, so you can see a little marker as you're moving between the different points. He sort of understood that, but it might be a little bit too a little bit beyond three-year-olds, although just having a walk in the park was a lot of fun for him. And I think probably up to about 9, and then it gets, it really depends on how open your kids are to these kind of things. And then after that, it seems to be after 30, people just enjoy it because it's kind of a kitsch thing to do, I think. We were here at the Come Out and Play Festival last weekend, and there were a lot of 30-year-olds running around the park and having fun with it.
There seems to be, one of the reasons why we're speaking to you is there seems to be a lot of obvious connection to geocaching, and hence a lot of geocachers have started playing it. Have you been in communication with Groundspeak and with geocachers in general?
We have. We've just been firing a few emails back and forth last week. I know that a lot of the people who've been coming to our website and who've been emailing us directly have been geocachers and have been, there's been a lot of interest in that community. Originally we come from this from the perspective of people who are really passionate about alternative reality gaming, and so we just sort of made that mobile, and all of a sudden it became something really close to geocaching and caching, and something that really has come from that direction. Having done a little bit more research about it now, we realise just how these two communities have been converging, and I think the mobile devices, particularly like the iPhone, that have given us a little bit more flexibility in what we can do, have sort of catalyzed that coming together of the two communities. And so we were quite surprised by the enthusiasm from geocachers, but very pleased.
It seems to be very similar to the Where I Go application, which Groundspeak developed about 2 or 3 years ago. And a lot of people who have tried to develop the games or the cartridges for that application find it quite difficult. I mean, first of all, tell us how much sort of time and effort did it take to put together this hidden park, and how easy would it be to develop future applications?
Well, we've built it on a fairly modular system, and so that it would be very easy to insert new animation assets and new cards and screens and pop-ups. The games that they're a little bit trickier to program, but basically inserting the basic assets is very easy. And we're working on something. We don't want to reinvent the wheel, so we don't want to reinvent Where I Go. But we would like to see to create something that is perhaps a little bit easier for people to interface with, particularly the user interface, but also something that is geared more towards gaming and storytelling, not just storytelling.
Okay, now they're located in a couple of countries around the world. Obviously, the first two that piqued our interest in Melbourne and Sydney. You mentioned New York. Where are some of the other places where people can play this game?
So at the moment, there's Boston as well, London in Kensington Gardens, Munich's Englischer Garten, in Tokyo in Ueno Park, and Hong Kong Zoological Gardens, and in Toronto High Park.
And are you looking to expand it around to other cities around the world?
Definitely. We'd really like to see if we could get the community to go out there and build their own parks. It's incredibly simple to do, particularly for geocaches. All you have to do is go out, collect some GPS points. It would be better if you took a few photos for us as well. We've got a set of instructions which we can mail you if you contact us through the website, which is thehiddenpark.com. We've had quite a few people contact us already, and we'll be building those parks and publishing them in the next update of the app. What we're planning on doing within the next month is releasing a version of the app where people can build their own parks. So that way that we don't have to just do one per city. You can do one just in your local suburban park. And that will be coming out, I think probably in the next month, maybe 6 weeks. And that will give people a lot more flexibility, so they won't have to come into central Sydney if they want to use it. They'll just be able to do it. Even if they don't want to do it in parks, they can set it up just around their neighbourhood or just around their street. Because of the accuracy of the GPS, you probably need points about 50 metres apart as a minimum. But that's something that people can experiment with when the new version comes out.
Okay. So there'll be some sort of builder application that people would be able to use, or would they just send all the data back to yourself?
No, there'll be a builder, and what will happen is that when they go around and collect the different GPS points and the photos, that'll all get uploaded to a content management system, and that will be then available for them immediately, and they'll be able to share that information with friends if they want to immediately. We'll have to review the GPS points and the photos in particular before we publish them as public parks, just in case people put inappropriate content up or misunderstand the game and make inappropriate GPS points. But but basically the idea is it'll give the users, or parents really, the opportunity to build their own parks. And we're hoping that people might do this if there's enough parents with iPhones, that they'll actually do this as a group, a group event for maybe even children's parties or just something to do with kids on the weekend.
Would the storyline have to be the same throughout, or can people sort of modify it?
No, the storyline's going to be always the same. So just for this first version, like I said, we're building, because it's so modular, we can build extra assets and create extra stories. But one thing we looked at when we started researching a little bit was, rather than trying to do something that was, that could be everything for all people, we thought we'd create a system that was open in the sense that people can export it to their own parks, but closed in the sense that it has nice assets, it has really rich media, it has great animations, it has, it's a really fun thing to do. We put a lot of effort into, into the design and into the images, so that people would get a really rich media experience that could be played, that could be scalable in the sense that it can be played all around the world. And then hopefully at some point in the future, we'll do that again. Rather than creating something that is, that people can create their own stories in, but the stories we saw tended to be a little bit thin, not as a criticism, but tended to be the way we saw it.
So it works on the iPhone application. Obviously, there's a number of other smartphones out in the market, BlackBerry and just over your way, the Palm Pre have come out. Is there a view to expand to those platforms as well?
Definitely. Yeah, when we feel comfortable with those platforms, again, this is the same sort of theory that we had with trying not to be everything to everyone. We just thought we'd focus on getting this working on one device. And if anyone comes across any bugs or any technical issues, please send us them, no matter how small, just send them to us immediately so we can fix them up. And then once we feel really comfortable with what we've made for the iPhone, and frankly right now we are feeling really comfortable, then we'll move on to other devices, and we'll do it piece by piece. We're not going to try and roll this out too quickly so that we end up with some of the technical problems that have been experienced for some of the other applications. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the applications available from the iTunes store, and those who have an iPhone would be very familiar with how that all works. How much does it cost?
It's $7.99. Again, that was because we felt like if you're going to make the effort to go to the park, then you'd probably be comfortable paying a slightly higher price for a better product, you know, with more animations and more games and whatnot. It's also, I mean, it's a lot cheaper than going to the museum or the library. The museum. Or going to the movies even. And it sort of offers an experience. We tried to create something that was as much fun for kids as going to a movie, but instead of having them sit in the dark, they can actually go out and have fun in a park.
Yeah, get some fresh air into their lungs. And exactly. And for those who aren't in those cities, there's also a little application that you've got available for download from your website where people can use some of those animation overlays on top of their photos. So I think it's the Hidden Fairies.
No, that's right, Fairies Everywhere, right. It's called, and that one's free. That's just a little... an app that you can just play with at home or anywhere, and it puts fairies over pictures. We've had a pretty amazing response to that as well. So some people refer to that as a game. We really just meant it as a sort of preview. But yeah, it is a lot of fun, and particularly if you've got young kids, it's a great way of keeping them entertained in a car. It seems. Again, my nephew had that one going on the subway. Again and again and again.
Well, it's a fantastic application. As I mentioned to you before the interview, you've almost tempted me to go out and actually buy an iPhone just to have a go at this application. Look, thanks very much, James, for joining us. And if you want to find out more, head to the website at www.thehiddenpark.com. James, all the best over in New York.
Thanks very much, Darren.
Well, it's time to have a look at some of the events occurring around the country, and the first one's on the 5th of July, and rather than me tell you all about it, here's Pagel Boy.
Whether you've found one cache or 1,000 caches or more, you're most welcome to come to Sharky's Meet and Greet the 5th of July at 12 o'clock. Hope to see you there.
Okay, so check out that event. That's down at Wollongong on the 5th of July. On the 14th of July is a school holidays pub lunch. That's the sort of traditional pub lunch that occurs every few weeks over in Adelaide. On the 18th of July is the Merangadang Pub Geo Lunch. That's by the Timos in Queensland. And also on the 18th of July is Cached on the Strand in Townsville by Cached. And on the 2nd of August is the Geocaching New South Wales 2009 AGM, and that's going to be held in Sydney in Carlingford. So there's a couple of events occurring around the country. Hopefully you'll be able to get to some, and why not create one of your own? Well, it's time now to go into the GeoTalk mailbag, and we got a few emails. First of all, got one from Zemi over in Wisconsin in the USA, and he wanted to email in about the tip that I gave in last episode on automatically importing Pocket queries using the Get Data via Mail function. Now, he says he's been using it for a bit over a year, and he's added one more modification. He says if you go under the Tool Options menu, there's a tab for assigning keyboard shortcuts, and he's assigned the Get Data via Mail function to the F11 key. So now when he opens up GSAC, he just presses F11, and there you go. After a couple of minutes, all your Pocket queries are updated straight from your email inbox. And it's a great tip. Thanks very much for that, Zemi. Another email that we got from Phil, who goes by the name of Sam Walker. He says, thought you might like to see this email. We subscribe to CSIRO's Helix magazine, and over the last few editions, they have shown a lot of articles about geocaching. Now, to tell the truth, that's how we got into it in the first place. There was an article in issue 123. It caused us to look up on geocaching.com, and we found there was one in our street, and, well, the rest is obsession. Now, he says last Friday they subscribed to Science by Email, which is a great email service. And I'll give you a link in the show notes, or you can go to www.csiro.au and do a search for Science by Email. Now, this is a free science email with a news and experiment and trivia and all sorts of great stuff to check out. And in there last Friday, he says that they had something about a treasure hunt. And so they looked it up, and it's all about geocaching. And CSIRO Education, it turns out, have placed geocaches around the country in each of the capital cities. and they have a little prize there for people to go find it. So check it out, Science by Email by CSIRO Education, and thanks very much to Phil for highlighting that for us. If you've got an email that you want to send into GeoTalk, you can. It's pretty easy to do. Just type up an email and address it to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call in an audio mail like you heard at the start there from Searchwise, or say from Pagelboy there. Just dial 02-800-50-436. Well, that is just about all for this extra long episode of GeoTalk. Thanks very much to our guests who appeared on this particular episode. Now, before we go, the answer to the trivia question for episode 48, and that was who is the fastest person to reach 1,000 finds in Australia? And that honour goes to Marcus Vitruvius from down in Wodonga, down on the Victorian New South Wales border. It took him 174 days. Now, ADV from North Island of New Zealand comes in an honourable second. He got 183 days it took him. The rest to round out the top five, Feather Top from Victoria on 274 days. O'Cholio from South Australia with 282 days. And Udira from Queensland with 297 days. Well, that's it for this episode. Next episode, we're going to head back across to the United States again, but this time we're going to go to San Francisco and catch up with another Aussie cacher about a new product that he's put together. And we'll get around to that thing on Firefox and how you can rate your caches that appear on geocaching.com. Till next time, safe geocaching. Well, in this episode of GeoTalk, we're joined by Scott from Adelaide, or just outside of Adelaide, up in the hills area, also known as FireSafe. Welcome to Geocache.
Hi, Darren.
Start again.
My son was beating the crap out of me while I was feeding him a bottle. Fancy being beaten by a 15-month-old.
Unbelievable.